Linus Van Pelt, the resident intellectual of the Peanuts comic strip, once articulated his philosophy of life as, "No problem is so big or so complicated that it can't be run away from." It could be argued that for many years, such was the view of book publishers when it came to Amazon. Welcome to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Beyond the Book. The Amazon problem, as big as it was only a few years ago, is now bigger than ever. So big, in fact, that escape may not be an option. With the latest news on the Amazon problem and even possible solutions, Andrew Albany, senior writer at Publishers Weekly, joins me now as he does every Friday. And welcome back to Beyond the Book, Andrew.
Greetings, Chris.
So clearly the Amazon problem, it's not going away, but some things have changed. And this week we had some major developments in the stories that you've been following for us. And let's start with a deal that Amazon has struck with a major publisher, but no, not as yet.
That's right. This week we learned that Amazon has struck a new terms of sale agreement with Simon & Schuster. Now, I've said all along on this program and in print that Amazon would likely reach deals with other big five houses before Hachette, with which it started very publicly negotiating first. And while I'd love to tout my powers of prediction, I don't think I was going out on too much of a limb there. But the question now on everybody's mind is what SNS's deal with Amazon means for Hachette and their battle, and what this actually says about the larger battle over terms with Amazon. So, you know, broad strokes first, and here I'll raise another point that I've been harping on, and that's as public as the Hachette battle has been, you'll note that the details of this Simon & Schuster agreement are confidential. And that's generating as much hair-on-fire speculation as we've seen in the Hachette saga so far. You know, let's start with what we do know, I guess. And we do know that Simon & Schuster's deal is a multi-year deal. And that's unusual because usually Amazon likes to do shorter deals. We also know that CEO Carolyn Reedy said that SNS had agreed to a version of the agency model. We also know that the deal allows Amazon, with some exceptions, to discount a little bit off books, even though SNS maintains, at least in theory, as far as we understand, the right to price its books at whatever level it wants. And Reedy also, in a letter to authors, said that she was happy with the deal and that it maintains the publisher's and the author's current share of income generated by ebook sales. Now, as to all the speculation we've seen in the media, it's really been all over the map. Is SNS going to pay more co-op fees? We don't really know. Are they going to get better placement on Amazon's homepage? Don't really know. But my favorite response so far has been from Authors United, and that's the group of authors organized by Doug Preston. And, you know, basically he said, okay, fair enough. He told this to an NPR reporter, but the deal still doesn't solve the problem of Amazon. Now, I think he's right. It doesn't solve the problem of Amazon. But then again, I never thought that he was interested in solving an Amazon problem in the first place.
Yeah, well, interesting point. And, you know, the Amazon problem is a question that you and I and a number of other important panelists, including Oren Teacher from the ABA, will be discussing at the upcoming Miami Book Fair next month in November. But what do you mean about Preston and Authors United and the quibble you have with his comment about the Amazon problem?
Well, you know, from all the statements that we've heard from Authors United thus far, they've mostly been pretty, well, I'll say wishy-washy. But, you know, basically they've been saying, like, just keep selling our books. You know, don't hurt us. That was their main argument. They were supposedly not taking sides in this. But if we're going to talk about Amazon as a problem, to use Doug Preston's word, well, that really is a much larger discussion. You know, it's a discussion that Paul Krugman from the New York Times weighed in on this week. And that's also gotten a lot of press this week, too. And I'm a huge fan of Krugman's. But again, I think he kind of missed the point on this issue, too. So I'm not going to reveal too much about the kinds of things that we're going to talk about on our fabulous panel in Miami, which I'm looking forward to, by the way. But if there is an Amazon problem, I'll just say that I think it's a much bigger problem than exists in the book business. You know, it's a problem that I think we as a nation need to discuss. It's a problem about how our big box economy needs to be balanced with our Main Street economy and how our online economy is changing that dynamic even further. And this is a discussion that's really long overdue. You know, Walmart's been putting local hardware stores and others out of business for years. And before that, the chain stores like Barnes & Noble were destroying indie booksellers. But now, because Hachette is delaying delivery of some titles, that's a bridge too far. Well, you know, I'd like to see the Amazon problem properly framed and properly discussed. But I'll say this, the Amazon problem, in my estimation, is also a publishing problem. And the publishing problem is that for years, publishers have sought to stop innovation from disrupting its legacy business. And Amazon, on the other hand, has sought to innovate. Now, antitrust laws or scathing editorials like Krugman's are not going to do the job here. You know, I think publishers need to realize that they have to step up too, that they need to give readers what they're looking for, and that's innovation. And I think we've seen so far from publishers in the digital age mostly a flurry of lawsuits and, you know, some pretty crazy schemes, I think, to slow down innovation in the ebook realm. And I think it's clear at this point that that strategy has run its course, or at least I hope it has.
Well, when it comes to lawsuits, of course, they do take their time working their way through the system. And in one particular case, there was a ruling in an appeal of a longstanding battle over electronic reserves, which is commonly known as the GSU case, or Georgia State University. And you're going to be looking at that particular ruling in depth in this coming Monday's issue. Give us the high level review of that right now.
Yeah, you know, that's right. On October 17th, the 11th Circuit reversed and remanded a key fair use ruling in the long-running case over digital course readings on college campuses. But while on the surface, this appears to be a legal victory for the plaintiff publishers, two major library associations and a bunch of lawyers I spoke to this week say that this is actually probably a win for the libraries and for a popular practice known as e-reserves. Now, we've talked about this case before, the GSU case, and just as a brief recap, in this case, three academic publishers, Oxford University Press, Cambridge University Press, and Sage, sued a handful of administrators at Georgia State University. They alleged that the GSU administrators systematically encouraged their faculty to put unauthorized copies of course readings up on GSU's digital content service as a no-cost alternative to traditionally licensed course pack readings. Now, in 2012, this went to trial, and it didn't go very well for the publishers. And ultimately, Judge Arinda Evans found infringement in just 5 of 99 copyright claims. But a lot of these claims were sort of tossed on some pretty mundane record-keeping issues and other technicalities. Ultimately, the publishers were denied the injunctive relief they hoped might rein in the practice somewhat. After all, they claim they've been seeing their licensing revenue decline every year since e-reserves have sort of changed the landscape. So the appeal. Late last week, the case was remanded back to Judge Evans that did find errors in her judgment, and it gave her instructions on basically on how to rebalance her four-factor fair use analysis. Specifically, the court took issue with what it called her overly mechanical approach. That's to say, you just can't do a four-factor analysis and tally up the factors and say, boom, fair use. Because in each case, the court ruled, the factors carry different weight. For example, market harm, the fourth factor, might carry more weight in some classes than the nature of the work, which is, you know, factor two. So in theory, you could actually have three factors augur for fair use, but still find that there was so much harm in that remaining fourth factor that that carries the day against fair use. Now, here's the rub in the appeal. According to a number of lawyers I spoke to, and will be in this article on Monday, and from the analysis from library groups, while the case was remanded to Judge Evans, in fact, the appeals court largely affirmed much of Evans' handling of the case, and it also rejected some of the publisher's core arguments. So it's unclear at this point if this is going to really change the outcome of the case overall. One thing we do know is that the case is probably going to drag on for quite a bit longer, even though I think at this point, in fact, long ago, I would say settlement probably was the best way to go here. I heard from GSU officials for the article, and they told me, in no uncertain terms, they're not planning to settle. They say they see this as an important precedent. So as much as we might like this case to go over, and as much as we did get some good case law, I think, out of this, it's going to be a while before this is all over. So don't take the lawyers off speed dial and keep writing the checks.
Well, certainly those lawyers do keep busy in the book business, and we keep Andrew Albany's busy reporting to us from the various courtrooms as well as from the boardrooms in book publishing. Andrew Albany's Publishers Weekly senior writer, thanks so much for joining us on Beyond the Book.
My pleasure as always, Chris.
Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center, a global rights broker for the world's most sought-after materials, including millions of books and ebooks, journals, newspapers, magazines, and blogs, as well as images, movies, and television shows. You can follow us on Twitter, find Beyond the Book on Facebook, and subscribe to our podcast series on iTunes or at our website, beyondthebook.com. Our engineer and co-producer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. My name is Christopher Keneally. For all of us at Copyright Clearance Center, thanks for listening to Beyond the Book.